This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Fact that the Yiras Shomayim, which is motivated by fear, the Yiras Ha'unish, the fear of punishment, that form of Yira, although it's a much lower form of Yira, nevertheless, it's a channel to the higher form of Yira, to Yiras Ha'unimus, where one starts appreciating the Ribono Shel Olam for what he really is, not just for what he might do to one. This evening I'm going to touch on one point, which is the technique of actually achieving that. How does one get from one to the other? How does one get from Yiras Ha'onesh to Yiras HaRoimimus? How does one make that jump? It's fairly easy to be scared of punishment. That's a fairly primitive level. But to move from there into the much higher level of Yiras HaRoimimus, that's more difficult. And one of the technicalities involved in that jump is an area that we're going to be discussing in this session this evening. There's a very difficult Gemara in the beginning of Brachos on Daf Hay. Amar Rava v'yisem Rav Chiste. Rava says, and some say it was Rav Chiste, im roye odom shi yisurim boyin olav. If a person sees that suffering is coming his way, that he's having tzoros, that he has difficulties, yisurim, yifashpesh b'masov, he must start examining his actions. Shneimar, as it says, Nach v'sod rochenu v'nach koiro v'noshuvo ad Hashem. We shall search our ways and examine them, and then we shall return to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So what do we prove from that pasuk? One has to search one's ways. Why should one search one's ways? Because something's going wrong. It's not going as it should go. And then comes the tshuva. Pishpesh v'loy motza. If he did examine and he couldn't find anything, Rashi says, not that he couldn't find anything necessarily, but loy motza aveiro beyodoy shebishvilo ruuyin yisurin halolu lovoy. He couldn't find an aveiro that fits these particular tzoros. He couldn't find an aveiro which would justify this particular suffering which he was going through at the moment. Yeah, everybody's got aveiros here and there, but he couldn't connect them up at all. What does he do then? Yitle bevitul Torah. Then he can assume that it's because of Bitul Torah, wasting time. There's time where he could have been growing, where he could have been thinking, where he could have been learning, where he could have been developing himself, and he was wasting that time. One must assume that that's what it is, because all forms of different forms of Yisurim can come as a result of that Avera. Shneimar, as it says, Ashrei HaGever Asher Teyasrenu Ko. Happy is the man who is caused to suffer by Hashem, and teach him from your Torah. So it would seem that the consequence of the suffering will be learning. So if you see that the suffering is coming and you can't find any particular avera for which seems to be responsible for that suffering, then yitle bevitul Torah, so increase your activity in learning. And if he examines himself in that area too, and he can find nothing in that area too, he doesn't waste a moment. There's no possibility that Bitul Torah can be the cause of the Avera. Then he knows that it's Yisurim Shel Ahavo, it's pain, it's suffering of love. Says Rashi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Miyasro Ba'olam Hazeh, the Ribbono Shel Olam causes him to suffer in this world B'loy Shum Ovun, without any sin, so as to increase his reward in the world to come, Yosef Mechadei Zuchu Yosef, more than his merits. It's a very strange concept. Normally we say that there's Ein Yisurim Beloi Misa Beloi Chet, Ein Misa Beloi Chet, there's no death and suffering without sin somewhere along the line. And here we see a chiddush, here we see that it is possible to have Aveiro, that it is possible to have Yisurim, to have suffering, to have difficulty, tzoros, with no avodas at all. A tzaddik gomer, a man who's never done anything wrong, and he can still suffer. Why is he suffering? We have a concept here of Yisurin Shul Ahava, a concept of suffering of love, where the Ribbono Shel Olam institutes the suffering for reasons of the Olam Haba, for no immediate reasons. What does that mean? Why does the Ribbono Shel Olam do it? What is results from it? That's what we're going to discuss this evening. Well, there's a Rambam which I quoted last night that affects this week's Sedra, where the Rambam talks about this disease which is referred to in the Sedra, the disease of Tzoras, and the Rambam says that this is a shame. Is used b'shutfus kolel l'inyonim harbe she'en doimin zeh l'zeh. The Rambam at the end of Hilchus Tumas Tzoras says that the word Tzoras, this that I call leprosy, is a general term that covers many different types of symptoms, and he explains it, and he then says v'zeh hashinui ha'omur b'vegodim u'vevatim, and this change in appearance that affects clothes and houses shekaroso teiro Tzoras b'shutfus Hashem, which the Torah calls this tzoras, this leprosy, using the same term that we use in human disease. Einai mimin hagoy shel olam, this is not a natural event. Elo ois ufere hoyo bi Yisrael, it was a sign and wonder in Yisrael. Kedei lahazhiron mi loshon hara, so as to warn them against loshon hara. Shamasape be loshon hara mishtanos kiros beiso, if a person talks loshon hara, the walls of his house started changing their appearance. Im chozar bo yitzar habayis, if he does tshuva, the bayis becomes pure again. Im omad berishro, if he persists, at shehutas habayis, until the house has to be demolished, which is what has to happen ultimately. Mishtanin klei ha'oyeshe beveso, then the leatherware in his house starts changing. Shuyeshe b'sheche v'alev. Im chozar bo yitzar, if he does tshuva, then they become okay again. Im omad berishro, if he persists, at she yisrofu, until they have to be burnt. Mishtanim abgodim shalov, then the clothes start becoming affected. Im chozar bo yitaru, if he does tshuva, then his clothes come right again. Vim omad berishon, if he sticks by it, at she yisrofu, until they get burnt. Mishtane oiro, then his skin starts getting funny. Vitzareya v'yeh muvdal umfusam levadei at shelo yisasek b'sichas arashoyim shu'al itzonus v'loshon hara, and then he will himself become tomei, and he will have to be set aside in a separate sort of area of the camp where he will not come into contact with other people, and therefore will not come into contact with people who talk Lashon Hara, and with people who are cynical and who mock and so on, and that way he'll come right. The Rambam doesn't use the word Oynish here. He doesn't say that this is a punishment for Lashon Hara. He says it's Kedei lahazhiron mi Lashon Hara. This is in order to warn them against Lashon Hara. It's not the result, it's not the consequence of Lashon Hara. This is not the Oynish, this is not the punishment. It's Kedei Lahazhiron, to warn them against Lashon Hara. So it's really Mikan Ulaba, it's for the future. It's not you are being punished because you talked Lashon Hara. This is an Azhora, don't carry on talking Lashon Hara. Don't do it anymore. The Azhora, the concept of the Azhora, is the same term that we use for a mitzvah Lo Yitaseh, when the Torah says don't do such and such. Lo Yitzach, Lo Yitinah, Lo Yitachmoid, whatever the Torah says, Lo Yit, don't do, we call that an Azhora, a warning, a negative instruction, don't do something. And that's the same term that the Rambam uses here. The leprosy, the Tzoras, is an Azhora against Lashon Hara. That's also a little bit difficult, because doesn't the person know that Lashon Hara is also? Do we need the leprosy to teach him that you're not allowed to talk Lashon Hara? The Torah is full of it. Chazal are full of it. There are halachas all over the place about not talking Lashon Hara. If you'll tell me that the tzaraat is a punishment for talking Lashon Hara, I'll understand. The Torah says you mustn't, and you did, and the punishment is tzaraat. But the Rambam doesn't say that. The Rambam says it's an azhora for Lashon Hara. This is a warning, don't talk. If he doesn't take the Torah's warning, what's he going to take the tzaraat's warning? What does he need the Tzoras' warning for if in the Torah says quite clearly don't talk Lashon Hara? Most of the averas that we do are not done because we don't know the din. Most of the wrong things that we do are not done because we didn't know that it was osur, we didn't know that it was prohibited. Most of them we know that it's prohibited. So what is it then that happens to us? And one can even go further. Very often we even know the consequences. Very often we know it's a skila chas v'sholom, or it's a kores chas v'sholom. We know what the consequences are. We know what an olam haba is, and we know that an olam haba can be affected. We know what these yisurim are, and still we do them. What is it? The truth is, it's an abnormality. It's crazy for a human being who knows the consequences of doing something terribly wrong, and he still does it. say a person who murders, and he knows that the punishment for murder is that he hangs, and he knows that he doesn't have a chance to get off, and he does it still. There's something funny about it. There's something peculiar. There's something insane about it. And the Gemara says in Sota, in fact, that Ein Adam Oiver Aveira Elohim Kein Nichnas Boi Ruach Shtus. That a person does not commit an Aveira, a person does not commit a sin, unless in fact a spirit of insanity takes him over. There is a certain little touch of insanity in every Aveira. We're talking again not about an Aveira that's done b'shogeg, where a person doesn't know that it's Shabbos, or he doesn't know that on Shabbos you're not allowed to do X, Y, or Z. We're not talking about a shogeg. We're talking about a person who talks Lashon Hara when he knows quite clearly how severely also it is. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about a person who is dishonest when he knows midvar sheker tirchak. He knows it's also, and he knows how severe it is, and he knows how important it is to be straight, and yet he'll be crooked. We talk about a person who will steal, who will take something that isn't his, although he knows that it says that you're not allowed to do such things. That's what we're talking about. There's a ruach shtus, there's something peculiar, there's something krum, there's something actually crooked in him, there's something funny going on in his whole psychological and psychiatric makeup at that moment. It's not normal. One must always be careful to distinguish between what is normal and what is average. When we say it's not normal, that doesn't mean that most people don't do it. The fact that most people do something doesn't mean it's normal. If you live in a one of these places where you're going, one of these asylums, your rules of normality don't change. What is average changes. What most people are doing changes, but that doesn't make what they're doing normal. And if you're living with Ovre Avera, if you're living with people who commit Averas knowing that they're wrong, you live with dishonest people who know that you're supposed to be honest, you're living with Medabre Lashon Hora when they know that you're not allowed to talk Lashon Hora, you live with Leitzonim when they know the seriousness of Leitzonis, of being cynical and being negative, and yet they do it, that doesn't make it normal. It remains insane, it remains mad, it's Ein Adam Ovre Avera and Kein Nichnas Bo Ruach Shtus, it's insane, it's crazy. Everybody does it, but everybody's crazy. There's a very beautiful Gemara in Yumad Daf Lamed Hei Amud Beis. Tanu Rabbanan, we learned in the Braisa, only the Oshir, a poor man and a rich man, the Rosho, and a wicked man. Three types of people. Boyin Ledin. The three of them come upstairs to the Ribbono Shel Olam for judgment after 120 years. Well, at least only an Oshir maybe after 120 years, the Rosh, I don't know, it might have been less. The only Omrim, for the poor man, they say, Mipnei ma lo yasakta b'toira. Why, poor man, didn't you learn Torah? You were on the world for so long, why didn't you make something of yourself? Im Omer oni hayisi v'torid bimzonosa. He says, what a foolish question, with due respect. You know how busy I was trying to make a living. You know how difficult life was for me. How can you ask me such a question? Were you as poor as Hillel? Do you want to tell us that you were so poor as Hillel? Omru alav al Hillel azokin, they said about Hillel, shebechol yom v'yom hayoese, every day he used to go to work, umistaker betarpek, and he used to earn a tarpek. Now we don't know exactly how much a tarpek is, but you'll see in a moment how much it must have been. Half the tarpek he used to give to the man who used to sit at the door of the Beis HaMedrash, and a half for his parnosos, and for his home. So think for a moment. The man who sits at the door of the Beis HaMedrash is not exactly a wealthy man. He's not exactly a man who could find another job. So he's an oni, he's a poor man. And that they give him, as he sits at the Beis HaMedrash with his hand out, and people give him stock as they walk in. So how many people came into the Beis HaMedrash? Maybe it was a small Beis HaMedrash, maybe 20 people came in, 30 people came in. Maybe it was a big one, we don't know, but maybe 20 people came in. That means that if everybody used to give him a half tarpek, he used to earn 10 tarpeks a day. And on that he was a very poor man. Otherwise he wouldn't have been a Shomer Beis HaMedrash. Hillel used to live on half a tarpek a day. So just figure out the poverty. He used to earn one tarpek, give half of it to the Shomer Beis HaMedrash, and he used to live on the other half. Hamachas loy motzar lihistake. One day there was no business that day, and Hillel didn't have any reserves, as you can imagine. Loy hinicho shomer beis hamedrash lihikones, and the man at the door of the beis hamedrash would not allow him in. That was the rule, that everybody had to pay to come in. That was not only to keep the beis hamedrash going and to give the man tzedakah, it was also so the person should feel an obligation, should feel that he nothing's for nothing. Allah, he went up, a man, by the way, who's earning one trepik a day, of which he gives half to the shomer beis hamedrash. One thing I assure you, he's not going to fall asleep in the shir. That's it. When he's given half of his salary is given to come in, he's not going to fall asleep, no matter how tired he is. And you can imagine how tired Hillel used to be, and no matter how boring the shir, fall asleep there would be no chance. Not once you've given half your salary to the beis hamedrash to get in, and without that you couldn't get in. So a certain standard was preserved that way, apart from all the other reasons for it. But this day he had no money, so he wasn't allowed in. What did he do? V'nitle v'yoshev al pi aruba k'deish yushma divrei elikim chayim. He didn't say, well, it's only half the day, normally by this time I've got my income. Today I haven't. If you get into the beis hamedrash, I can't in any case, I might as well carry on working. No, this is not the time for working, this is now the time for learning. He couldn't get out, so he went up to the roof, and he found a sunlight on the one of these fan lights on the top of the roof, and he sat at the fan light to be able to listen, Kadesh Yishma Divrei Elokim Chayim, so that he should hear the words of the living God, Mipish Maya Vavtali. Omru, they said, that day was a Friday still. Utkufas Teves Hoysa, and it was Teves, which in the northern hemisphere is the coldest month. The Yorad Olav Shelig Min Hashamayim, snow came down from Shemayim like unusual. Kishe'olo Omud HaShachar, when the Omud HaShachar came, so when did he learn? At night. His working time was the whole day. He earned his trepik during the daytime. Then he used to spend the whole night in the base of Medrash. He used to catch a nap here and there, 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there. That's the way they became who they became. And on the one day that he didn't have, the one night that he didn't have, so he went in the night, in Teves, in the snow, and he listened at the window at the top. It comes Omud HaShachar, it's time to start davening. Omar Lishmael Avtalion, Avtalion Achi. Shmaya says to Avtalion, Avtalion, my brother, what's going on? Normally at this time it's already much lighter, and today it's still dark. Shema Yom Amarununu, maybe it's a cloudy day. Can we start davening or can't we start davening? We have to check and see. It sits away name, so they look up at the fan light. Verud Musadun Baruba, and they see a man pressed against the fan light. Although they went up, Umotsu Olov Rum Sholish Amus Shilig, and they found on him three Amus of Shilig, according to the Shir of the Chazanish, probably. And that's a lot of snow. Why, how much is it? Nearly 6 feet of snow over him. Parku, they took him apart, v'hichitzuhu, and they washed him, v'sikuhu, and they massaged him, v'hoshivuhu k'neged ha'madura, and they put him at the fire. Omru, and they said, roi ze l'chale l'alovis ha'shabas. Such a man, he was so far gone that one could even be mechal ha'shabas for him to save him. It was pikuach nefesh. And that's the story they tell the man who says he was too poor to learn Torah. He was too busy. He was too busy making a living. He didn't have time to learn Torah. Oshir, if he was a wealthy man, Emrim lo mipnei malu yosakta b'torah. So the wealthy man comes and they say, look, why didn't you learn Torah? Why didn't you make something of yourself? Im oimer oshir ayisi v'toru dayisi v'nechosai. They say, you know what it was. You can't say that I wasn't about tzedakah. I used to give a lot of tzedakah. To give that amount of tzedakah, I had to look after my business. I was busy day and night. Were you as wealthy as Rabbi Elazar? Tell us. Omru alav Rabbi Elazar ben Chasum. They said on Rabbi Elazar ben Chasum, sheniach loy oviv elef ayoros bayabosha uchenegdom elef sfinas bayom. His father left him 1,000 cities and 1,000 ships. That was his inheritance. You can imagine the size of his financial empire. Here people get excited when one landlord owns one suburb or a couple of buildings in town. People really get excited. 1,000 Johannesburgs he owned. 1,000, with a ship for everyone. And every day, that means without exception, except Shabbos, he used to take a canister of flour on his shoulder, and he used to go around from city to city and from place to place to learn Torah. To go to one place, when he finished learning there, he would go on to another place throughout his life. One day his own servants found him, his own the people who worked for him, his own employees found him and obviously didn't recognize him. And they said to him, come, all of us have to do work for our balabos. What is business that you're not working? Where are you off to? We have a Rabbi Lozer as our balabos, and you need to do something to earn your keep here. Amalehim, he said to them, "Bevakoshu michem anichuni, please leave me alone, ve'elech l'ilmud Torah, and let me go and learn Torah." Amru loy chayer Rabbi Lozer ben Chasam she'in menichem esro. By the life of Rabbi Lozer ben Chasam, we're not going to let you off this business. Then the Gemara goes, he had to pay them fortunes. He said, I'll pay taxes instead, anything. He paid them a lot of money so that they should let him off. Why didn't he just tell them, I'm Rabbi Elazar ben Chasam, what are you talking about? That he wouldn't do. That would mean that on the back of Torah he would be earning money. That's not. They say that he's got to work. Why? Because everybody does. If the work was worth 100 rand or whatever it was, by telling him that I'm Rabbi Elazar ben Chasam, they would have left him alone. That he didn't want. Not to do it just because he was Rabbi Elazar ben Chasam. And in all his life he never paid a visit to his 1,000 cities. Can you imagine such a businessman who never went to his office? He employed good managers and he put it into their hands and that was it. He sat and learned all day and all night. Second example of somebody who didn't use to sleep. Literally half an hour here and half an hour there, if that. They used to sleep a maximum of 2 hours, it would appear, a maximum of 2 hours split during the day. They just put their head on the stender and they would sleep for 15 or 20 minutes or for half an hour and that would be it. But they were in the learning 24 hours a day, day and night, not a moment out of it, even though he had this massive empire that he had to look after. So they say to the rich man, are you going to tell us that you were more busy than Rabbi Elazar ben Chalkum? Could have been had he wanted to. So it's got nothing to do with how rich you are, it's got nothing to do with how poor you are. If you want to become great, you could have learned. You didn't learn it because you didn't want to, and stop giving us stories. Rosha in Rimlein, that gives the case of the Rosha. If the Rosha comes, they say to him, his name, Malu Asakta Baturo, you're not neither so rich nor so poor. What have you got? What's your excuse? Oh, he says, Bibnei Oma Noah, you see, he says, you know, the Ribbono Shel Olam made me very handsome. What can I do? It was my curse. The Torah beyitzri, and the girls were after me all the time, and I couldn't get my mind onto learning. I tried, but very hard. I just couldn't. They said to him, "Klum Noah Yisam Yosef? Were you more handsome than Yosef?" Amru Alav Al Yosef Atzadik Bechol Yom VeYom Oseh Potifar Mishad Lasei B'Dvorim. Every day, the wife of Potiphar used to start working on him and try and seduce him. And don't forget, he was a young man of 18, away from his home. Begodim shelov sheloi shachris, lelov sheloi arvi. She made quite sure that the clothes she was wearing in the day weren't the clothes she was wearing in the night. She was always wearing something else, always very suitable for the occasion and designed to seduce. Begodim shelov sheloi arvi, lelov sheloi shachris. The next morning again she changed, always working on him. Omroli hishamali, and she said to him, "Look, how about it?" Omroli, he said to her, "Lav omroli harin lav." And she says, "No." Omroli, she said to him, "Harini chavashtechol beres asurim. I'll have you locked up in prison." Omalo, Hashem matir asurim. Hashem will release me. She says, "I'll have it." Each thing he's got a posuk for, and he doesn't go on. Eventually, nesonoli elef kikore kesef dishmoa eleha. She gave him 1,000 silver. It's not koin, the kikar of kesef was what do they call them? Talents of silver. Sorry? Yeah, in blocks of stuff, 1,000 of them. It's a lot of money. The loy rotza lishmael, and he didn't lishkavetz labeulam. Haza liyusim aloyulam haba. He didn't want to lie with her in this world and be with her in loyulam haba. That's it. Nimtza Hillel Mechayeves Ha'aniyim, Rabbi Loza Ben Chasa Mechayeves Ha'ashirim, Yosef Mechayeves Ha'rishoyim. Hillel obligates the Aniyim, Rabbi Elozer obligates the Ashirim, the rich people, and Yosef is Mechayev the Rishoyim. Reb Leib Chassman asks, what kind of business is this? Isn't there a simple answer? No, you bring me a raya from Hillel. If I was as great as Hillel, I would also have done it, but you make me an ordinary person and you make me poor. Alright, not as poor as Hillel, but for me it was poor. You talk about Rabbi Elozer ben Chasam. If I had the wisdom of Rabbi Elozer ben Chasam and the tainer of Rabbi Elozer ben Chasam and the godliness of Rabbi Elozer ben Chasam, sure I would have done it as well. But I was just an ordinary man. How can you compare me to Rabbi Elozer ben Chasam? And compare Rosho living in 1984 to Yosef Atzadik. He could withstand it, why couldn't you? Well, what comparison is that? You really expect me to be on the level of Yosef Atzadik? Says Rabbi Leib Chassman there. That's not what the Gemara means, and the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't expect that. What he does expect is just one thing, that you should live in accordance with your knowledge. That's all. He knew how important learning was, so he was Moser Nefesh for learning. Rabbi Elozer ben Chasam knew what it was, he was Moser Nefesh for learning. Yosef knew how important it was to stand by his word, to stand by his principles, and not to give in to Eishes Potiphar, and he lived that way. All the Torah is asking is that you live in accordance with who you are, not more, but at least that, at least that there shouldn't be a gap between your knowledge and your action, at least that there shouldn't be a gap between what you know is right and what you do, between what you know is wrong and what you do. And we all find ourselves in that situation. We all know more than we keep. We all have higher standards in our minds than in practice, and we need to analyze this evening. Why can't we get on top of it? Why can't we bring our practical levels up to the point where there's no gap, where the two are on the same level? What is the shoyte? We said ein adam nichnas elam kein ein adam over avero elam kein nichnas by ruach shtus. A person is only over an avero if he goes a bit peculiar, if he goes a little bit insane. What is that shtus? The Gemara gives various symptoms of insanity. One is a person that tears his clothes, a person who walks on the street alone at night in dangerous places, a person who's given something, whatever you give him he destroys, he breaks. It's insanity. Why is that insanity? Because his own instinct for self-preservation isn't even working. When you tear your clothes, don't you realize that your clothes are protecting you? Good, you don't want to work for things, but somebody's giving you something, what are you destroying it for? Don't you realize that you're only damaging yourself, nobody else? As long as you might be damaging somebody else as well in your actions, then you could claim, I'm not crazy, I'm wicked. But when you're not damaging anybody else, you're only damaging yourself, then you can't claim to be wicked, then you must be mad. There's no other thing to be. A person who tears his own clothes, a person who whatever you're giving me destroys, that's a meshuggah. Why? Why does he do it? Let's try and understand the psychology of a meshuggah. His own instinct for self-preservation is damaged. It's not so much that his instinct for self-preservation is damaged. That's akoch ha'atzalchai. Every living person has such an instinct. But he doesn't realize that he's damaging himself. That's what it is. If he realized that he was tearing his own clothes, or when they were torn he wouldn't have clothes, then he wouldn't do it. But the mishugas is that he doesn't understand the consequences of what he's doing. And again, if he's doing it to somebody else, if somebody else is also suffering as a result of his actions, then we don't know whether he does know the consequences or not. Maybe he's scheming and he's prepared to cut his nose to spite his face. Literally, he's prepared to suffer himself as long as the other person will also suffer. But when it's only he who's suffering, what is he doing it for? You must say he doesn't realize that he's going to suffer. That's the mishugas. He tears his own clothes and doesn't realize what he's doing. A mishugana. A crazy person is a person who is unable to appreciate the consequences of his actions. And now we understand why Ein Adam Chote Elohim Kein Nichnas Bo Ruach Shtus. How can one know when one doesn't have it, nobody else suffers, you suffer. It's our own Olam Haba that's in jeopardy, not somebody else's, ours. So how can we do such a thing when we know it? The answer is we don't know it. The answer is we're crazy. We don't realize that this causes that. There's a certain gap, there's a link missing in our understanding between the action and the consequence. when we sit in the Beis HaMedrash and we learn, then we know that if you do such and such, you'll suffer in such and such a way. But when it comes to the actions, the Ruach Shtus, we go crazy. So a moment of Meshugas, and a moment of insanity, when we do these kind of things. But that's terribly serious, because if that's so, how are we ever going to come straight? And how does it really help? So the Rambam says that one gets tzaraas, one's house gets tzaraas afterwards. What does that really teach us? The Gros says in Mishnah in Perek Tzayin in Pasuk Daled that every human being has his own style of Avodas Hashem. Ki lechol odom v'odom, this is a very important Gros. Every single human being, yesh lo derech bifnei atzmei leilech bo, he has an individual path along which he must go. You can't just put everybody down the same road. Each person is an individual, because their knowledge, their intellect is not similar one to the other, and their faces are not one like the other, their natures are not the same. And when they were Nevi'im, people used to go to the Prophet, to the Novi, to find out, what did they used to go to the Novi for? To find out the Halacha. You don't need a Novi to find out the Halacha. So what did they used to go to a Novi for? To know what I must do. Not to know what the Din is. I know what the Din is. But in the nuances of Halacha, where individuality is called for, where distinctions need to be made between one person and another person, where levels need to be understood, need to be directed, then the Novi would say, "Al pi mishpat hanavua, darkei asher yelech bo lefi shoresh nishmasoi lefi teva gufoi." Then the Novi would instruct him what approach to take, what line to take, what direction to take, in accordance with the root of his soul, of his neshama, and the nature of his body. Those are the two things that have to be considered. Who are you in essence? Your neshama, what kind of person are you? Do you need this approach or do you need that approach? Shivim ponim l'Torah, there are 70 different approaches to Torah, and each individual has to find his one. And also teva gufo, how strong you are physically, how much you can take. And after that, Misha bitlo hanavua, and after Navua was gone, yesh ruach hakodesh b'Yisrael. Then there was still ruach hakodesh, eich liznaik. How we should operate. Still, a person can be influenced with a pure spirit from the Ribbono Shel Olam, which directs you as to how to behave. Baruach hakodesh yesh lechol odom v'yodom. And ruach hakodesh, in potential, every human being has. There's nobody you can say, I can't get there. If a person really needs to know what to do in a way that in the old days he would have gone to a Novi, today he can do it with his own Ruach HaKodesh. However, that is provided that the person she'en beruchu shum doifi, that there is no negativity, no doubts in his spirit at all, in his attitudes. Ve'en tivoi mis'ave v'noite chutz midvar retzoyna yizbarach. This goes back to the Shalashudashir. And there's nothing in his spirit, there's nothing in his makeup that tends towards his own desires. He wants to do only what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants. He's completely over the point, beyond the point, where he still has a conflict between his own desires and between what is right. Then he can have Ruach HaKodesh. Aval im chas v'sholim yisnaig al pi ruchu. But if Chas v'Sholem, if he's still the kind of person who's on that very bottom level of still doing what he likes to do, what he wants to do himself, he's not yet on the level where he's able to do only what's right. V'yesh b'lvavoy shoresh koton shepoyle roshu le'ono, as yesh b'ruchay remiyo v'yipol mishamayim lo'aretz. Then he's going to fall from heaven to earth, no matter what level he's standing on. Just one false step and he can fall all the way down. To the point where he can't even stand up. And he'll move away from the ways of Hashem and his mitzvahs. And he won't even know himself, says the Gros. Once you don't have that Ruach HaKodesh, once the human being has also his own desires and does things sometimes on the basis of what he wants, not on the basis of what is right, then there's the possibility of falling down to the level where you don't even notice how far you've gone. And that's obvious. If an Aveiro takes you further away from the Ribbono Shel Olam, which certainly it does, If before the Aveda you didn't know that it was, that you were able to do it, you were confused, you had this craziness, however you want to see it, before you fell, you could do the Aveda. What chance is there that after you've done the Aveda, you're going to be able to get back up to where you were? People always think, ach, Yom Kippur's coming, it's time to do tshuva. And I always say, doing tshuva is much harder than not doing the Aveda in the first place. Much harder. And if you think it's easier, you don't know what tshuva is yet. It's much easier not to do the Aveda. And if you couldn't withstand that, if you fell for it and you did the Aveda, right, where are you going to get the courage to do tshuva from? Are you that much more energetic now than you were? Are you that much on a higher level now than you were? You've done the Aveda, you've fallen. To push yourself up, to boost yourself up from those depths back to where you were before you did the Aveda. What kliyches that means. And if that's the case, how do we ever come straight? So we've said, Ein Adam Chete, Elon Kein Nichnas Boi Ruach Shtus. A person only sins if he's gone a little bit crazy. On a very superficial and basic level, we've spoken before how the best preserver, the best preservative of mental health is punishment. There's nothing that keeps a person sane so much as the fear of punishment. Why there's so many people who get off the murder charge on the basis of insanity is because it's very easy to be insane since you can get off the murder charge. It's a vicious circle. When this Ruach Shtus comes in, it depends what consequences there are. If it's clear to one, at least the physical consequences of doing it, the Ruach Shtus is a little bit more easy to govern. If there's a fire and putting your hand in, you feel that it gets hot, it's easier to learn that you don't do that. It's easier not to become insane in such things. You don't see Meshuggahs jumping into fires. Either they tear their clothes, they don't know the consequences, but they don't jump into fires. Not so easily. Until they're very, very far gone. And we've often spoken that in child education it's very important to allow the child at an early age already, a very early age, to feel the consequences of his own actions. It's the most important thing that he learns what it is to fall off the bed when he climbs near the edge of it. It's important that he maybe even cuts himself a little bit when he's playing with a knife. It's important that he falls off a chair if he's swinging on the back of a chair. All these things are very important. All one has to do is to try and arrange the environment in such a way that he doesn't encounter something which is dangerous. But if it's hurtful, if it's going to hurt him, it's very good for his mental health. Never mind for every other form of health. Very, very good for his mental health. But there's more to it than that. We need to see how we're going to get this person who's committed an Aveira beyond that. We want him even to go beyond the fear of punishment. That's what we started with. It's all very well to say, okay, so he'll get a clap and then he'll know it's wrong, but that's still Yira Feinish. We're not getting beyond that. How do we get beyond that? There's an amazing Ramban on this week's Sedra, also on the same thing that the Ramban talks about, and it throws light on the Ramban. On the pasuk v'habeged ki yiyeh boi nega tzoras, and the clothing also gets the tzoras. Says the Ramban, like the Ramban, zeh ha'inyan einoy b'teva klal. This matter is not in nature at all. V'loy hoive b'olam, and it is not a normal thing that's present in the world. V'chein nigei habotim, and the same applies to these diseases that the houses get. Avol bat. B'heyoyis Yisrael shleimim l'Hashem, when Yisrael are complete, are perfect with the Ribbono Shel Olam, yiyeh ruach Hashem aleihem tomid, the Spirit of Hashem is with them at all times. L'ha'amid gufam uvigdehim uvateihim b'mare tov, and one of the effects of this presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam is that their bodies, their clothes, and their houses always look good. There's a certain sparkle about their physical appearance, about their clothing, and about their houses. And when there's a sin and a aveira in one of them, there will be an ugliness that takes place, a change towards ugliness that takes place in his body, in his clothing, or in his house. Lirois ki Hashem sar me'olo, so that he should see that Hashem has moved away a little bit. I will place a tzaras on the house. Because it's a plague from Hashem, it's not a natural thing, it's from the Ribbono Shel Olam himself on that house. It only works in Eretz Yisrael. We've often talked how it's all very well to go to Eretz Yisrael because the mitzvahs are greater mitzvahs there, and there are all sorts of mitzvahs that one can do there which you can't do elsewhere. One needs to remember that there are all sorts of avedas that you can do there that you can't do elsewhere as well. And there are all sorts of punishments which apply there which don't apply elsewhere. One has to be on the standard, one has to be on a level. If one's going to Eretz Yisrael because one's scared of living in Chutzlah, it's good, so you go. If one's going to Eretz Yisrael because one is a secular Zionist, good, you go. There's no reason not to go. If you go to Eretz Yisrael for nationalistic reasons because you believe all Jews should live together in Eretz Yisrael, good, you go. But if you want to start using the Torah as your excuse for going to Eretz Yisrael, then one has to be careful. One has to make sure that one is on the level where one is able to capitalize on all the extra mitzvahs without losing out on all the extra avodas. This happens in Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't happen in Chutz La'aretz. We're not on the level in Chutz La'aretz for the Ribbono Shel Olam to be so matpid to this degree. It only happens Ba'oret Shehi Nachalas Hashem, which is the inheritance of Hashem. The Ein Hadol Mipnei Yosoi Chovas Karkas has nothing to do with being tied to the ground. Alam Mipnei Shelo Yovo HaInyan Ahu Elo Ba'oret HaNivcheres Asher Hashem HaNichbad Shoichin B'Teichav. Because this only happens in the holy land where the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam dwells. That's where it'll happen. You need tremendous kedusha for it to happen. Otherwise, you won't have it happen. There's a wonderful chiddush in this Ramban. The Ramban is telling us that the plague of tzaras is not something that Ribbono Shel Olam gives to us. It's the withdrawal of something we had all the time. That's what it is. We tend to look at tzaras as, hey, what's he done to me now? He's done nothing. He's just stopped doing what he was doing before. He was protecting you before, now he stopped. That's a tzara. That's Yisurin. That's pain and suffering. It's not that he's brought pain and suffering onto you. He's just taken a step back, that's all. He's just treating you a little bit less gently than he used to treat you. Says the Ramban, in Eretz Yisrael, when people are shleiming with Hashem, when they're on tremendously high madregas, the actual appearance of one's home, of one's clothing, of one's body is affected by the Shekhinah. We see that concept in the extreme with Moshe Rabbeinu. He comes down from the mountain and his skin actually glowed. There was a fire so much so that people couldn't look at him. That one's physical appearance is affected by one's spiritual purity. And not only one's own, but one's clothing and one's heart as well can actually be affected with an aura of one's own achievements if one's really on these tremendously high levels living in Eretz Yisrael. And if there's an Aveira, there's a diminishment of the Ribbono Shel Olam's presence a little bit, which starts making things look dull and ugly, and colors start changing. All of a sudden something starts happening. Once that's the case, things start being able to be understood a little bit more clearly. What happens then when Yisurin takes place? If one's on the level, what does one become aware of? Does one become aware of the pain and suffering? Is that what one's aware of? No. One's aware of a removal of the Ribbono Shel Olam's Hashgacha Pratis. What a tzaddik suffers when he has pain, it's not because his hand is sore, that's not what causes him to suffer, that's the suffering that he can overcome. The Gemara says in Erchin, what suffering? Where do Yisurin start? You put your hand in your pocket to take out a 5-cent piece and by mistake you take out a 10-cent piece. That's Yisurin already. What kind of Yisurin is that? So you put your hand back and you take out the other coin. It happens to us all the time. We don't regard that as Yisurin. Because we're not living on the level where every time we put our hand in, the right thing comes out. Where every time we drive down the robot is green. Wherever you're looking for parking, a car drives out in front of the building you need. Then should it happen once that doesn't happen? That's a tzora. Not a tzora because now I have to drive around the block again. Not a tzora because now I have to put my hand in my pocket a second time. That's not the pshat. A tzora because look what's happened. The Hashgacha Pratis is no longer with me. I don't have that level of communication with the Ribbono Shel Olam. I don't have that level of intimacy with the Ribbono Shel Olam which I used to have. He's moved away from me. What's happened? That's the way he sees the Yisur. Often talked about how a father and a mother have to punish a child in different ways. A father punishes with a clap, if necessary. A mother punishes by withdrawing emotionally a little bit. The greatest punishment a mother can give a child. If the child feels that she's not quite relating to me the way she did yesterday, what have I done wrong? Oh, that's the question we want him to ask. And he has to learn that. That when she's withdrawn, it's because I've done something wrong. And he questions. Yirat ha'oinesh is part of the Midas HaGvura. We relate, when we relate to the Ribbono Shel Olam with his Midas HaGvura, with the harshness, with the punishment, with the justice, that's the fear of retribution. When we relate to the Ribbono Shel Olam with the Yiras HaRoimimus, where we fear the Ribbono Shel Olam for what he is, and we hold him in awe for what he is, that's not because of his punishment of us. That's a fear of him disholding between him and us. And when we feel that he's not as close as he was yesterday, that's the greatest Yisurim that they can be. But it's a different kind of Yisurim. It's Yisurim which brings about a Yiras HaRoimimus, not a Yiras HaOinesh. The tzaddik doesn't then go around and think, I must say Krishna with Kavona today, otherwise tomorrow, you know what will happen? Again, I'll put my hand in my pocket and only 5 cents will come out. Or 10 cents will come out instead of 5 cents. That's not what he does. He doesn't walk around with a Yiras HaOinesh. I better say my Krishna with Kavona, because if I don't, the Ribbono Shel Olam's distance will be maintained. I won't get any closer to him. I better learn a little bit harder. I better work a little bit better. Otherwise, that distance won't be that gap won't be bridged. That's the azhora of the person that talks Loshon Hora. It's a warning. It's not a punishment. A punishment for Loshon Hora, that's not just leprosy. It's worse than that. Not going to get away with leprosy as a punishment for Loshon Hora. That cheap it's not going to be. As much as they suffered. The leprosy was just that they should notice, as the Ramban says, that the Ribbono Shel Olam has taken a step back, that's all. And that's an azhara, that's a warning for the future. It's not fear for the past. In that case, we can understand the Gemara that talks about Yisurim Shel Ahava. What does it mean now? The Ribbono Shel Olam punishes us even though we've done nothing wrong, out of love for us. Yisurim Shel Ahava. If we suffer, we must start examining what is it that, why are we suffering? What is the pasuk? Nach b'sod zerochem. Examine your ways, not your deeds. We're assuming that you're not doing anything that you know is wrong. You know, if the halacha is A, you're doing A. Nach b'sod zerochem, but your derech might be wrong, your approach might be wrong, your attitude might be wrong. Check it. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam is distancing himself from you. That doesn't work. Yitleb a Bittul Torah, so you must assume it's Bittul Torah. That doesn't work. You've checked and there's no Bittul Torah. Then you know, b'yadua shi yisurim shel ahava hem. You know that it's yisurim shel ahava. What is yisurim shel ahava? We talked about the mother distancing herself as a punishment for a child. But there's another kind of distancing. When a child is learning how to walk, and you're holding the child's hands and you're helping the child walk, and then the child's just getting to the stage where he can take a step or two and he falls down and he hurts himself and he gets up again and he takes a step or two and he falls down, and you're holding the child and you say, right, come to me, and he takes a step and he manages, and you take a step back and you say, come, and he takes another step and you take another step back. Nebuch, what did the poor child do wrong? You told him to come and he's coming and you walk away. The answer is, the more I walk, the more he'll walk. He's in search of me. And I want him to learn to walk quickly. I want him to walk further and faster. If I'm going to stay where I am, when he reaches me, he's not going to walk any further. That's Yisurim Shel Ahava. Once we understand the principle that Yisurim is a distancing of God from man, that's what it is. It's not a punishment. It's not that God does something actively. God stops doing what he was doing. That's Yisurim. Without an Aveira, it can happen too. A real tzaddik, where the Ribbono Shel Olam wants him to come a little bit further, they're closer with him, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't remove himself from him, day in and day out, there's the threat of a certain stagnancy, even on his level. And the Ribbono Shel Olam thinks, Avraham Avinu, I'll take 10 steps away from you. And if you can just walk those extra 10 steps, do you know how much further you'll be? It's going to be hard for you. You won't understand what I'm doing. You'll wonder. It will be strange. It will put you in a strainness, you'll suffer, I know. But where you're going to get is a result of that. And so the Ribbono Shel Olam takes a step away. And Avraham has to struggle and fight to take that step closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam again. The Mishnah says that one has to make a brocha not only for good news but also for bad news. If one hears something bad, one has to make a brocha too. And then afterwards the Mishnah says, Chayev Odom Levorich He must make a bracha on the bad the same as he does on the good. But we've already learned that. The Mishnah, in fact, has already told us what the bracha is. So the Gemara asks in brachas Daf Samech Amud Beis, "My chayav mevarech al harov k'shem shemevarech al hatov." What does it mean that you must make a bracha for the bad the same as you make a bracha for the good? If we say it means k'shem shemevarech al hatov, hatov ameitiv ken mevarech al harov hatov ameitiv, that you must say the same bracha. But if you hear good news, you say Atova Ameitiv. So if you hear bad news, you should also say Atova Ameitiv. That's none. We've already learned in the same Mishnah, Abasuris Tevis Omer Atova Ameitiv, that while on good news you must say Atova Ameitiv, Abasuris Rose Omer Boris Dayana Emes. On bad news you must say Boris Dayana Emes. It's a different bracha. So that's the equation that the Mishnah comes with afterwards, Kashem. The same way as you make on bad news, on good news, so you must make on bad news. Answers the Gemara. Omer Rove Lehitzricho. Elo lekabulin hu besimcha. That you've got to say that bracha of Boruch Dayan Emes with the same simcha, Paskins the Rambam in Hilkos Brochas, with the same simcha that you say a Boruch Toiva Ameitiv. You know what that's asking of a human being? Chas v'sholom, a person standing at the Beis Olam, at the cemetery, with a broken heart, and he's got to say a Boruch Dayan Emes. He has to say it the same way as he said the bracha when he heard that he passed his final exams. He's got to say it with the same kavanah when he heard that he just won an incredible business deal and is a multimillionaire, or he won a lottery and is a multimillionaire. The same simcha, the same joy, Boruch Dayan Emes. How is it possible? I've said to you once, without any proof in Chazal, it's just a feeling of mine, that some people enjoy the feeling, I'm talking physically now, not spiritually, some people enjoy the feeling of heights, of soaring, of going up, and some people enjoy the feeling of coming down. Maybe some enjoy both, I don't know. Some people enjoy a plane when it's taking off, and some people enjoy it when it's landing. Some people enjoy the feeling when you go up in an elevator, and some when you come down. Some people enjoy hang gliding and skydiving, and some people enjoy gliding. It's a different kind of feeling altogether. And I've always felt that it has to do also with one's spiritual tendencies. The feeling that spiritual people like to soar, like the upward movement. Physical people like to jump, they like the downward movement. And I've done my own little survey and it seems to work. But there's something here. There is something in jumping. What there is in a jump is at least awareness of how high you were. At least that there is. When I was a little boy, my parents took us over to England for a number of months to put us into a Frum school there. In those days there were no Frum schools here, and since my father's work was here, this is where we had to live. But in order to have the benefit of Frum schools, we used to go away for several months at a time, and we used to be put into Frum schools and into yeshivas overseas. And the first time we went by ship. It was 2 weeks there and 2 weeks back. And I remember asking my parents, if we're going to learn, we're going to school, what's this business of 2 weeks there and 2 weeks back? By aeroplane it was only 36 hours each way. So they said, later on they told me, we wanted you to understand how far it was. You would never have understood how far you had gone if you'd got there in 36 hours or in 24 hours. You sit there for 14 days and the ship is going day and night. You hear the drones of these engines. Apart the fact that I suspect that they enjoyed the break for the 2 weeks both ways, apart from that, educationally they wanted us to know how far it was. And that's true. I don't think that a child today, as much as he might have travelled, or an adult today, has any clue as to how big the world is. I don't think he has a feeling. A telephone, he picks up and he talks, and he gets into a plane and he goes from one place to the other. The world has become so small that he doesn't understand how vast it is. It will be a big chiddush to him if he takes a long walk through open countryside to realize how long it takes to get from point A to point B. It's amazing for him. He doesn't realize the vastness of the olam. And I remember thinking to myself on our next trip when we went overseas, also to yeshiva, and that time we went by plane. I remember, but I thought it would be chutzpahdik to ask my parents whether we should now jump out with a parachute to realize how high we are. But that there is, the feeling of descent at least lets you know how high you were. When a person suffers yisurin, If they're Yisurin Shel Ahava, then certainly there's reason to have Simcha. But if it's not Yisurin Shel Ahava, if it's Yisurin because he's done something wrong, what is it that he's feeling? If he's feeling the pain, he's not going to be able to say Baruch Da'ai Nemes with the same kavona as he makes a Tzoyva Ametiv. Can't be. But it's not the pain that he's feeling. What he's suffering is the removal of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And in that there's a certain comfort. In that there's a certain simcha. I didn't realize how close he was to me until he moves away. We take that for granted. We don't know what good health is until we're ill. When we're ill, it's the time to make a brocha on good health. When we're poor, chas v'sholom, it's the time to make a brocha on wealth. When we're suffering, it's the time to make a brocha on rabchus, on comfort and ease. Not the other way around. We don't know what it is when we've got it. When the Ribbono Shel Olam is close to us, and every time we put our hands into our pockets and we put out the right coin, and the road that's always green and the parking is always there, even on the little things, how much more on the big things, we don't know what it means. We don't even feel that he's near to us. And so once the robot's red, then the whole thing suddenly means something to us. And we realize how he values us. We realize how great he considers us, that until this moment he protected us. Now he's taken a step away, but it shows me Abkana has been with me. And I've got to get back there again. And there's a simcha in that challenge. The knowledge that I'm capable of it. The knowledge that I have it, I've already achieved it, so surely I can do it again. The knowledge that he was with me, and he's only taken a step away to teach me something. He's only taken a step, either like the father with a little child because he wants me to walk a little bit further, or it was I who took the step away, not him. And if it was I who took the step away, there's great simcha in being able to make that brocha. Baruch Dayo Noemes, Ribbono Shel Olam, you're right, it's so accurate. I took a step away from you, it's right, I should feel the consequences. And to take the step back, and to get back where one was, where one was previously, thereafter enabling oneself to build forward, to avoid the Yisurin in the future, unless it's Yisurin Shel Ahava, which also will promote one's own growth.